Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
This is The Counter Row, a Six Nations podcast brought to you by The Irish Times. Many thanks to our sponsors, Nifty Business. You can find out more at niftybusiness.ie. I'm your host, Nathan Johns, and on today's episode, I have Gordon Darcy with me, and later on, we'll be joined by our guest. Mike Bubbins is a former underage Wales and Cardiff back row. He's now a podcaster, pundit, and comedian, as he is the host of the Socially Distanced Sports Bar. Right, to kick things off, I'm here with former Ireland international and current Irish Times columnist Gordon Darcy. Gordon, how are you?
I'm not too bad.
How did you survive a weekend with no Six Nations?
Well, you and I caught a glance at each other as we were up in the gantry in the RDS watching Leinster play at the weekend. So back to domestic rugby.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. They used to try and keep the two running side by side for a few years, didn't they? And I think then one year they had no domestic during the Six Nations, and now I think it's probably the right balance getting it off during the off weeks. Mixed weekend for the provinces. Well, actually, generally pretty good. Munster, Connacht, Leinster all winning. Rough day at the office for Ulster, but given we were both there, I gotta ask you about Jamie Osborne's performance in the 12 shirt. It seems to be a position that Ireland are just churning players out. You look at whatever about the four guys at senior level,
yeah,
with Bundy, Robbie Henshaw, Stu McCluskey, Gary Ringrose, but then you look at domestic young lads. Stu Moore's doing well in Ulster when he's fit, Carl Ford out in Galway, even someone like Frisch down in Munster, and now Osborne, who's just back from injury, and last year he was in a Six Nations squad. Let's not forget that.
Well, he was in the World Cup squad until he got injured. I'm not sure the balance is right. I think it will be more games in the same weekends of the Six Nations. I think there's a big gap there where a lot of players haven't played really any rugby for a number of weeks now.
Well, if you look at Leinster playing Saracens this week on a Friday to kind of deal with that gap.
But like, you're kind of going like, and this is just my personal crusade, you would just love better quality or higher quality consistently in the AIL, where all those players were distributed back to the clubs and you would have a genuine, you know, pathway with the clubs and the professional game. You know, wishful thinking, but instead, you know, you're playing Leinster A games against someone else rather than these guys consistently playing for clubs. But anyway, that's
your broke pair.
Yeah,
it is an interesting point, and I will ask you again about the centres, but because again, being at the game, we spoke to Leo Cullen afterwards on Saturday, and he did say, look, it's actually a big challenge for everyone all over the world since the Leinster A team rugby program and the global A team, well, global European British and Irish Cup, since that's gone, it's really tough for these guys. So people like Osborne, who probably would be pushing someone like a Henshaw for a starting jersey for Leinster, he'd get more games. But look, he's only 22. But I think he hadn't played since playing against Connacht before Christmas. I think that was round 7 of the competition. But you look at him, full package. He's got the left boot, not quite James Lowe at the left boot, but not far off. 6'4", nearly 100 kilos, wins collisions, wins gay lines, and also brilliant distributor. He's arguably one of the most complete centres that's in the system at the minute.
So I was commenting on a game in Gloucester in Europe.
Last January.
I think last January.
He was also player of the match then.
Wow, you are an
encyclopedic. I was also at that game. Yeah,
there you go. There you go. And what is what's so nice about him is, so he's the complete package. It's his decision making is on another level. So that is what sets him apart from everything. So, like, I'm going to do a random story here. I remember doing a kicking session with some of the top on a Lions tour, or really like the top three out halves in the world and two centres and everything. We're doing a kicking competition. And I, you know, practice and I'm able to win that competition in that training session. You go to a rugby match and I try to kick a ball and it will fly off. It'll fly off the outside of my boot. You can see coaches like, you know, covering their eyes when I even shape to kick a ball, because I just wasn't able to translate it into a match setting. So an isolated skill with no pressure, do it no problem. Actually put the pressure onto it. Yeah, now I could do other things, but just kicking was just an example of that. Jamie Osborne has all of those, very high proficiency in all of those areas that you talked about, but his ability to do them under pressure is fantastic. Most players will either, when pressure comes on, they'll default into either passing the ball too early or they'll just tuck it under the arm and just carry it. His ability with the ball in hand, he has his own option to carry. He has the pass, but he also has that kick option, which makes him such a dangerous player to defend. And what happens then is defenders know that and they don't engage, which makes it so hard to play against someone like him. So immediately you say, oh my God, this guy can pass, kick or run, legitimately all of those ones. So as a defender, you tend to step back, which means then he is on the front foot and attacking, and you've already lost that. You've already lost that engagement.
Or the other flip side of that coin is they over-engage. I think it was the Liam Turner try on Saturday, that brilliant first phase strike.
Yeah.
Two defenders go straight on Osborne and he doesn't get the ball, and then there's a gap out the back. So it works both ways.
Yeah, and even before that, he's off the top of the line out and he just gives the little ball back inside to
Russell.
Rob Russell, yeah. But somebody had tried to overcall it and I was watching it and I was saying, no, he's actually taking control. He's like, no, the space is still here. So even though the defender had come off the line out, exact same thing, two defenders honeypotted into him. He looked like he was going to carry into contact and just a yard before contact, pops it up, and Rob Russell gets in behind, and Luke McGrath scores off that. So that vision he has is really, and for me, that's what sets him apart from other players.
He's also one of those guys that's a big feather in the cap for provincial player development programs, because he's a club player rather than a schools player. And we saw him wearing his green Ney socks. All the lads were wearing their club or school socks on Saturday. I think it was the URC Origin Round, is what they called it. Even the referee, Holly Davidson, she had her Murrayfield Wanderers socks on. I looked it up. It was great to see. A couple of interesting combinations. Max Deegan had one Wanderers, one Michaels socks on. Obviously being Leinster, lots of school socks. What would you have done? Who would you be repping?
Oh, that would have been Wexford Wanderers and Clongos, I'd say.
You'd have gone 1-1.
Yeah, probably been given out to them by Lansdowne for not throwing one in. But yeah, probably would have gone with that split.
What's that colour scheme? What's the make? Clongos obviously is the purple and white,
and Wexford Wanderers is blue and black.
Okay, that's an interesting colour clash there.
Yeah, it's great.
Worth touching on, big win for Connacht away in Cardiff over the weekend. Helped out a little bit by red card, but look, I think Pete Wilkins said afterwards he's been going to Cardiff as a member of the Connacht setup for 7 years and he hasn't won. Munster, comfortable victory on Friday night over Scarlets. Tom O'Hearn keeps scoring tries, doesn't matter whether he's in second row or at six, he's scoring loads of tries. Arguably the game of the weekend was that Ospreys last minute drop goal to beat Ulster.
Well, if you're judging it purely on excitement, yes.
Quality,
it
wasn't, no. Yeah, it wasn't, quality, no.
No, it wasn't the best thing. But what a drop goal from the young kid, Dan Edwards, isn't it?
Dan
Edwards. It was like, you know, we'll probably touch on this with Mike, our guest later, but like Wales have been forced to invest in youth and they're getting it back. Little moments like that. It was a great kick, obviously breaking the Ulster hearts. But across the board, you're seeing I think half of the back line for the Scarlets. Now, even though they got pumped by Munster were very clinical without being good. They were very efficient. And a couple of players from Scarlets, you're kind of going, There's definitely like 20, 21, 21. I think the scrum half was 21 and two centres were 20 or something. And you're kind of going, you can see these lads pushing along. But that's always been one of the issues with Welsh rugby is they create fantastic individuals. It rarely translates into great teams.
At club level, I think Yes. When they had enough, when they had enough, obviously they've won, they went through it in the first Gatland era of winning a few Grand Slams internationally. But that's the point. We were just talking to our colleague, actually, John O'Sullivan, before we recorded this. He's kind of like our resident 20s expert, and he was saying he sees it every year with the Welsh 20s. There's two or three lads, you go, yep, they could be something, they could make it at senior level, but nowhere near enough to make a team at that level, which means when those guys then fan out into the four regions, there's definitely not enough coming through to be... The conveyor belt isn't producing enough to have competitive regional teams, but then obviously that gets funneled into a Welsh side, which is struggling it a little bit. But like you said, we're going to get on with Mike about how they're turning to youth, so to speak.
Would the opposite be this fair for Ireland? We have a brilliant team and we win, and not too many of them translating into the, well, probably in Leinster, not too many of them translating into the senior team.
Yeah, it's an interesting one regarding the 20s, and we actually are planning on hopefully delving into Ireland under 20s and doing a bit of a special on that perhaps during the next down week. But before we move on to what's happening for Ireland this week, I want to quickly ask you about Ulster, purely because, look, it's not the first time they've lost. I think they've lost three in a row now. It's not the first time they've done that, but there just does seem to be a growing cloud of negativity up there. You know, the coach, Dan McFarlane, comes out and talks to the TV and he blames a refereeing decision on turning the ball over for the Ospreys' drop goal rather than being a bit more inward looking at his own team and himself, and that's rankled a few feathers up in Belfast.
You know, ultimately the game came down to two instances, both where we were in control, one in their 22 where they got an intercept pass, and the second one was at the end of the game where we were in total control and a refereeing decision called a scrum on the back of a maul. So, you know, I have literally no idea what that was about. You see that every week, but I'm gonna ask and find out, because ultimately those two instances decided the game in the Ospreys' favour.
It's like I said, it's just contributing to a negative feeling that's coming from down there. And like I said, they've lost plenty of games in the past, but this feels slightly different.
Pressure does funny things to people, and I'd say that was clearly a coach who's under pressure. And, you know, feels that there's a frustration, everything, and it came out. When pressure comes out unplanned, or, you know, frustration comes out unplanned, it rarely comes out in a positive fashion. And that just, you can see with Dan, he was just so frustrated to go from a winning position to losing the game. And that's hard to reconcile. I'm sure, you know, he regrets how it all came out. And that's just like the emotion of sport coming out. It is a worrying place for Ulster at the moment. You know, that was a fairly error-strewn performance. The individual responsibility not there, like nearly 20 turnovers. You know, the collective responsibility doesn't seem to be there either. So they really are at a crossroads. You know, there's still rugby to be played this season. And yeah, they need to find a way to, you know, to harmonise whatever's happening in behind the scenes. But yeah, like, and I've been there in those change rooms when things aren't going well, and you know, there's a frustration. You can start going, oh well, it's their fault. It's not my fault. I'm doing my job. And you know, a Declan Kidney-ism is like, you know, when you're pointing fingers, there's three pointing back at you. You know, there is probably a little bit of that going on up there, and that's when you need your leadership and your captains and big personalities within the group, not just the team, but within the group, the wider organization, to actually address that head on. What does Enda McNulty always say? It's like driving the elephant into the room. So there's probably a little bit of that needed up there at the moment.
Yeah, they're back in action along with the other Irish provinces weekend after next, when there's another down week in the Six Nations. But this is not a down week. We are here to talk all things Ireland versus Wales, which of course is on Saturday. And after the break, we will be joined by our guest, Mike Bubbins, who will chat all things Welsh rugby.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back to The Counter-Ruck, brought to you by the Irish Times in association with Nifty Business. My name is Nathan Johns. It's time to tell you about a competition we're running called Tap and Go. If you are, or if you know somebody aged between the age of 12 and 16 who's a budding sports journalist and you'd like to win a day out as an Irish rugby writer when Ireland plays Scotland on March 16th, here's what you need to do. Entrants should email a short piece that is no longer than 400 words on any match from the opening three rounds of the Six Nations to tapandgo@irishtimes.com. The closing date is Monday, March the 4th. Now, time for today's guest. Delighted to be joined by Mike Bubbins. Mike played back row for Wales and Cardiff at underage level. He also went on to play for the Glamorgan Wanderers as well as what is now known as Cardiff Met. But these days, he is a pundit, comedian and podcaster. He is co-host of the Socially Distant Sports Bar. Mike, we have to start with that beautiful Wexford GAA jersey you've got on. It's great, great podcasting, great, great radio, so to speak.
Thank you.
Talking
Thank
about
you.
The image first up, but you popped up on screen and there it is. And you should have seen the smile on Gordon's face when he saw you with the purple and gold.
Well, first impressions count, I think. So when we had Gordon over last year to do some stuff with us, he very, very kindly brought us all, myself and the other two lads of the podcast, with a Wexford GAA jersey. I love it. And one for my boy as well. God bless you, Gordon. He wears that all the time. It's his favourite top. So I thought, what better way to show respect than to turn up in my Wexford jersey?
Yeah, so Nathan was wondering why the Wexford jersey. So I was explaining to him that Mike's pod with the other two gentlemen is the Socially Distant Sports Bar, and their colours are purple and gold.
Pod colours, yeah.
I don't think we have any pod colours, do we? We're just green. The Irish Times is just kind of lots of green fonts all the time.
Yeah, we can work on that. We can get a few creative people out there and see if
maybe
see
some orange and some white would be nice. Well,
yeah,
top man.
Go there. Yeah, well, the three tend to go together, don't they?
Come here. Hang on. I've got to ask. Is this your podcasting room? Like, did you design the background and everything?
Yes, this is the this is where it all happens.
This is the new house. This is the podcast room.
This is the house the pod built. Yeah, this is the mortgage that the pod saddled me with.
All the rounds. Well, only the non round dodgers that contribute.
Yeah,
to
quite
it.
Right. Yeah, the chosen few. Yeah, so it looks like someone like I bought a house off somebody whose grandmother's died, and haven't bothered to decorate. That's the look I'm going for.
Coupled with a Wexford GAA jersey.
Absolutely. It's your wife is a lucky, lucky woman.
She is. She is a lucky. I tell her that every day.
Right. We talked about your background at the top of the show a little bit, Mike, in terms of your not just your podcasting background, your rugby playing background. And I suppose we should, this is Ireland Wales week.
We'll
get on to that. I mean, it's interesting looking at Welsh rugby from the outside looking in, because 12 months ago it was very doom and gloom, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And we got a little bit of a reminder of that watching Ken Owens telling us all there was no strike action on the Netflix doc a few weeks ago, and it kind of takes you back to that magical era. But Warren Gatland has just decided to go down a certain route selection-wise, and I think it's safe to say it's not all doom and gloom now. You guys look a lot more competitive.
Oh, it's fantastic. It'll come as no surprise when I tell you that the Welsh rugby at regional level and international level and every level really is skint and has been for a long time. So like I take my boy down, my boy's rugby crazy as well, take him down to see Cardiff every week or when we can. And because the bottom's fallen out of it financially for a lot of Welsh rugby, they're picking young kids, you know, who've got that lovely sort of, that abandon that a lot of youngsters play with, and you haven't got that baggage that you get as you get older. So they've played really good rugby this year, Cardiff, and they've lost games close games to Bath and close games to Harlequins, but nobody's down about it. But I think in the old days, when you watch Cardiff play, they focus on the fact that they're one of the biggest clubs in the world, one of the best histories in the world for rugby, all that sort of stuff. What they've done very cleverly at regional level is they now say, well, we're underdogs and we haven't got the money. We can't match the French sides and the Irish teams, the English boys. So they're bringing young lads through, 18, 19 years of age, and losing close games, but playing a great brand of rugby, which is, I haven't spoken to anybody that didn't enjoy watching the games. And those results will come. I think it's sort of writ large with the Welsh side, where we were in dire straits a year ago, and we are always in dire. We're either at the crest of a wave or the bottom of the ocean. That's just Welsh rugby the way it is. But what Gats has done is picked a young team who make young team errors and try young team things that don't go well and maybe don't manage the game as well as they should in certain times of the game, and that'll happen. But I think if he sticks, the key what they've got to do is to hold steady now. Right, what you don't do is pick a young side, they make some errors, and then you throw a lot of old heads back in there. Because why are you picking the young lads in the first place in that case? So stick with them now. Stick with them to the World Cup and stick with them through the World Cup. I wouldn't chop and change too much now.
Yeah, they've got literally have no choice. As you said, the money isn't there. I think a good... I watched a bit of the Scarlets game at the weekend against Munster. Now, scoreline was... obviously very if you didn't look at the match, you would look at that, but there's a couple of good examples of young backs, both the centres and the young scrum half, like 21-20, and individually they looked quite good and they all had really positive moments, and you could see you saying, oh, if he was dropped into a Welsh team or into a team with more structure or more, not quality players, but more experience around them, they're all playing they're all playing 30 seconds in front of them. Nobody's thinking about the game, as you'd expect a group of 20-year-olds to be playing. And as you're saying, you kind of had to learn how to play a little bit of that. So it is really interesting, but it's the same across all of the regions now, which makes it very interesting.
Yeah, and it's, like all professional sports, it boils down to money. I don't think... What we've always had in Wales is a load of kids playing rugby, right? It's a working class sport, especially in South Wales. So, when I was a kid, we'd have hundreds there on a Sunday. My boy plays, I've been coaching his team since under sevens. We'll have hundreds of kids there in the parks in Cardiff on a Sunday playing rugby. There's never been a lot of money in the game, and it's never been particularly well organised or well run or well administered. Without getting too deep with you, when they brought in regional rugby sort of 2003, 2004, like 20-odd years ago now, unfortunately, in my opinion, the Wales won a first Grand Slam for a long time the year after. Beat your lot, I think, 33-20 or something. And it was just a party weekend. It was fantastic.
I wasn't playing in that match, so...
Sorry, mate. But it was... I think since then, we've sort of punched above our weight in the Six Nations. I'd expect us to do all right in World Cups. You say get to a quarter final, well, yeah, you'd expect that because there's not that many top level sides in the world. But I think people also, I'm not a huge fan of the regional system. I think the clubs have suffered. I think the schools suffer. I think there's no real pathway at kids' level anymore. There's huge, 5 and 6 year gaps between rep teams. Doesn't anybody any favors. But people say, well, how can we win? We won Grand Slams and we won championships. I said, well, I look at it the other way and think, well, if we've got all these kids who want to play rugby and all these people, all this big, such an interest in the game, where would we be if the game's been run properly? We have done all right. We've done better than maybe a country this size should have done in the last 20 years. But I think we could have done even better if things were just done differently. I'm not sure. I don't know how the IRFU run things, but the Welsh Rugby Union, it's starting to change, but there was just so much nepotism and so much old school tie and so many people that were patently unqualified to be doing a job and running a multi-million pound business in positions making decisions that were just bad. Oh, so the downside of that is we haven't got the money. I mean, we're not a rich country anyway, but I don't know. I just think I got in trouble with the union before.
Is it fixable? So if you look at, say, looking at what that kid, Dan Edwards, is that right? Young kid
Ospreys.
Smashed Edwards, that drop goal. What a lovely bit of skill. You just wish there was 10,000 people there watching it.
And I think it's 5,000 odd down there.
Yeah, and that's the, and that's
to be fair though. I've got a lot of family in Wales, so I was over there over Christmas. I went to the Stephen's Day Boxing Day game against the Dragons. That was a sellout. Cardiff. Yeah. You said you go to Cardiff a lot. Cardiff are doing really well. They're riding the crest of a wave in terms of fans.
We saw a lot of games out this year. A lot of games out this year playing that brand of rugby because people want to be entertained. They want to watch good rugby. I'd much rather go down and see a young team. Not doing a caterpillar ruck, not box kicking everything, you know, running at people and attacking from defence and all that sort of stuff and losing a game 24-23, than watch a game that we sneak past by just kicking, you know, kicking for territory all the time. And people want to see that. I like I said, just anecdotally talking to people after games in the bar and walking home with my lad, everyone enjoyed those games, you know, and people came back the next week to watch them because they're playing. They can see what they're trying to do. They can see the way they're trying to play. So I'm hoping like this. So Cam Winnett, the fullback from Cardiff, who came through, you know, and that first game at Wales, he wasn't playing the sort of game that he plays for Cardiff because he's nervous and he's. I read a couple of good interviews with young lads in the press. They're just very honest, saying we couldn't get over the change of pace. We couldn't get over the difference in physicality at an international level. You know, we made mistakes. Well, that's fine. You're 20 years of age. Make mistakes. That's what it's for. I think Gats is doing it. I think, you know, I mean, he's a great tactician, Gats, anyway.
Oh, I don't know if he's a great tactician. I think what he's great about is getting players ready to play. So,
yeah, maybe that. Maybe, I mean, they talk about Warren Ball. We haven't got a great plan B normally, right? But what he's very good at, I think, is timing. And what he's been good at is making a bunch of players believe they're underdogs, believe they can do well. So I think it's timing spot on. I think if we've got a World Cup coming up in sort of 2.5 years, whatever it is, if he sticks with that squad, it's pretty good for him as well because it means he's going to get a contract for the next 3 years. you know, I think we'll do well in the World Cup.
And he's a big believer in fake tan, which is, he tried to bring that in, he tried to bring it into Ireland back a long time ago.
Take it backwards, Steph. What do you mean bring it in? What does that
mean?
Well,
he suggested that if we wore fake tan, we would look more athletic.
That's not true, is it?
That is 100% true.
I love him even more now. This is amazing.
And yeah, a couple of lads.
Did he coach Gavin Henson? He probably did, didn't he?
He probably did, yeah.
So that message.
It's true though, Gord.
What?
Everyone looks better with a bit of tan on him. Like this light is making me look, you know, not as attractive as I normally look. But I mean...
So I roomed with a couple of the Welsh lads on the Lions and stuff, and one of them in particular, I was rooming with him before a match and I just couldn't, I was dying to go to the toilet and he'd been in there for like an hour and 45 minutes and I was like, eventually I had to knock on the door. I was like, what are you doing in there? Do you remember that scene from As Good As It Gets when the door just opens and all the mist comes out? Out he comes, he's got the tail around the head. And he's like, not a hair from the eyebrows down, there's not a hair in his body.
No, you're not going to name names. That's disappointing. God.
It's not the socially distant sports bar. We have reputations to hold. And he's like, the fake tan is done. It's immaculate. And I was like, you do this every game. He said, absolutely. He said, I always
fake tan.
I feel £1 million now.
I was like a proto Henson. I remember being like, I'd always have fake tan. I was like playing youth rugby. I had more hair then. I had a lovely quiff. My sideburns were always immaculate. But a fake tan, lovely.
Still had a mustache?
No mustache then. I had the sideburns. I had no mustache then. I looked like a young Sly Stallone back in those days. And now I look like an older Pavarotti. Who's got a mustache this big? Bill Werbenick? I don't know.
But where we started with this was Gatland. So he was trying to get us look more athletic. I think one of the two of the lads tried it, and it was just like, yeah, that's not happening. But he is very similar to Andy Farrell in that, like, when you get players up to international level, right, they are you're not going to increase their skill level. You might be able to help them evolve the way they think about the game, but really, it is about getting players to buy into a system, get ready to play and express themselves. Or, depending on what type of coach you are, you tell them, this is how you play the game, these are the stats we're playing. We're playing a low, which some coaches still play to. But I think Gatland and Andy Farrell, they focus on the person behind the player and get them ready.
That's really interesting because you mentioned Warren Ball earlier, Mike. Yeah. And what Warren Ball is not the beautiful running rugby that Cardiff are playing these days that is getting people back in love with these things. So we're almost talking about Gatland here as the puppeteer overlord, and you know what is going to determine Wales' success or not is the style of rugby, and whoever is that more of a background staff thing, whoever is determining are Wales going to go into this running style.
So there's
again
a couple of things in that. So you look at, say, why did you play Warren Ball? Because you had Jamie Roberts, who was literally able to carry two defenders over the gain line, and once you get over the gain line with quick ball, like, rugby becomes quite simple after that. You have James North, you have John Davis, you had Tom Shanklin, players like that who are able to boss the game line. Mike Phillips, like, so you built a game that suited the players that were there. The overarching thing was you always had game breakers like Shane Williams, whoever, you know, whatever mercurial player was playing nine at the time, that would just do something completely off the cuff.
That was going to be my point, because if you look at where they've had success in the two games so far against Scotland and England. Now, granted, Scotland had two yellow cards in that second half, but Wales were playing against 13 men and they just said, right, we're going wide. We're playing against 13 blokes. We're going to go flank to flank, play some brilliant running stuff, win it. Was fantastic in that second half. And then against England in the first half, England were blitzing up and they went wide and they scored an unbelievable offload try. And in the second half, they narrowed up and England just swallowed them up. So it kind of gets at what we're talking about here. They're kind of caught between two different styles, but they're definitely having more success with the more free-flowing style at the minute.
Gordon, at the nail on the head then, really. We haven't got the personnel now. Or if we've got the personnel, then we've still got some big lads. Mason Grady's a big lad and George North's still in the side, you know. But other teams match up with that now. So we're not going to... We struggle up front. You know, we haven't got a dominant front row anymore. We haven't got... I think our second row needs a little bit of work. I can't wait for Rollins to get back in the side and bring a bit of physicality back there. But we haven't got the players to play that sort of Warren Ball game now. And I think Warren's taken a while to adapt. I think you look at that first half of the England game, it was so hard to watch because we're trying to play a sort of rugby. Obviously, boys that I've seen playing for their clubs all season are going in there and kicking possession away with no chase. We're kicking down the throat of probably the best high ball fielder in the Six Nations, in Stewart. You know, you're kicking the ball from 30 yards away at people, you're not going anywhere near a gain line first and trying to do it. So I don't know what they were doing. The second half, they came out and said, I mean, I'm a Warren Gatland fan, but when people were saying, I'd love to be able to bottle what Warren said to the boys at halftime against England. Yeah, but, you know, there's the same bloke we told him the game plan to start the game, right? So let's not forget that. You know, you've got to take the rough with the smooth there. I think you're right that he's more of a player person. His psychology is good. I think he was a good tactician. I think you might have a point there. I think when we had the players to play that sort of rugby, he was more at home with that. We can't underestimate either the difference that Sean made when he was running the defence, because you could play Warren Ball because you knew you weren't going to give any tries up, you know, because Sean Edwards and that defence was fantastic under him, and they worked well as a team. And I think him going and the reasons behind him going, I'm not going to go into them now, but I mean, we didn't cover ourselves in glory as a union again there. We're letting Sean go. But that's made a big difference. We're not the defensive powerhouse that we were.
Yeah, but I think, again, but that a part of that is down to players as well. So you look at the vacuum that's been left by Sam Warburton and, you know, Alwyn Jones, players like that were the foundations of really strong defensive lines, John Davis, things like players like that. That experience counts in defensive sets. Defensive mindset.
I think Rafael's been outstanding on the flank at defence and the breakdown. I think he's been a real fine. But I just, the important thing for me as a Welsh bloke who loves rugby is that we don't panic now. We've lost two games. We don't panic. There's not wholesale changes. We don't go back to the old heads. Just stick with these young lads that are playing now. And like I said, I generally don't care if we lose every game this season. I think Ireland will beat us handily. I think we've got a good chance of beating France the way France are playing now. And I think we've got a good chance of beating Italy, although they played really well in the first game especially.
So you know you're playing Ireland this week.
Yeah, I know.
Are you just going to talk about the other two teams, not the... Where do you see us?
Because I think Ireland will kick our backsides, that's why. And I'm absolutely fine with that. I think they're too good on both sides of the ball. I think we'll go over there and we'll get a real... Again, though, I know it sounds like a cliche, but just treat it as a learning process. I think we'll go to Ireland. I think a Farrell-coached Ireland side with all that experience coming out of a really good domestic competition is gonna take us the cleaners on the weekend, if I'm very honest with you. I think we'll lose by 20 or 30 points on the weekend.
Well, I won't ask for an official prediction then.
Yeah, before we go on to
I don't care.
Before we go on to that thing, what's the two bits, obviously the young winger that selected England over Wales.
Emmanuel Feo-Bosso,
yeah.
Yeah, I just wasn't going to... I am horrific at names and was going to do more damage by trying to... And the centre in Exeter can't play because he doesn't have 20 caps.
Oh, Hawkins.
Hawkins.
Don't get me on the 20 cap rule.
Oh, yeah.
Most short-sighted...
I really wanted to.
Oh, go on. Because it is an absolute... I'm not even convinced it's legal, right? I'm amazed it probably has been challenged legally. You've been in Wales enough, God, right? And Nathan, you've been here, right? If I wanted to go from my house in South Wales to where... There we go, to Holyhead, where you can get the ferry across to Ireland, okay? That would take me the best part of 4.5 hours because the transport systems are so awful, right? I can play rugby in Holyhead and be in the Welsh squad. That's not a problem, right? I can't go to Bristol, which is 35 minutes from my house, because then I'm out of the system, right? And people say, well, yeah, but it's about English clubs and the way that the Welsh clubs and regions will release players for games because of the deal they have with the union. It's a contract, right? So what you do is you sit down with Bristol and you say, okay, I want to sign a Bristol contract, but we need to be available for these camps with the Welsh side. It's not hard to do. It's not insurmountable to do it.
You also have to be legal. Like,
well, it's the same country, so it's like there's definitely some sort of employment.
The International Players Association, you have to release them for camps.
But there are games that are outside of that window. So the way that works is...
I think they say that, yeah.
There's always one... So they play four autumn games. One of those is not in an international window. So I think a couple of years ago, you saw Wales actually play pretty much a second string team against somebody.
Yeah, like, who cares about that?
But all you do is say... When you go to Bristol or Gloucester or Saracens or Racing or anywhere else, you say you've got to be available for all four games in the autumn.
Or just pick them for three.
But the main issue is, and that's what they're worried about, I think, is games in between Six Nations matches in the down weeks.
What do you mean? That he might get injured?
Yeah, so Dan Biggar was playing for Northampton every time there was a Six Nations down week and then playing for Wales the next weekend. There was no high profile.
But then all you got to do then, Nath, is in that contract, when you got your agents there and the lawyers, you just say, Dan's not available for these games. That's part of the contract. Okay, we'll pay you less. Okay, how much less?
Yeah, that's the thing. It could be a lot less.
Yeah, but you've got to... It's still... I was blown away with that. I was there going, you've uncovered an absolute gem of a centre.
And Joe Hawkins.
Unbelievable. Yeah. And the fact there's so many caveats. The fact that it was 60 caps. This is a great rule. It's 60 caps.
But his thing was he wasn't offered a contract. So even that, I was kind of going like, lads, you're doing your best to really balls this one up. So he wasn't offered a contract here. So he took one with Exeter and you kind of go, like, surely does just exempt him and just bring him back.
Mate, you are leaning against an open door, as Terry Wogan used to say, right? It is, yeah, it's so short-sighted that. And also you're talking about lads, like with Emmanuel, for instance, right? He wants to be a doctor. So he's thinking about his future outside of rugby. And you know what it's like. You could be out of the game at 24 years of age. And it's you're a long old time retired, and if you get injured and the game's getting more physical, you've got to sort yourself out so you need to get your career sorted and you need to, it's not dirty. If we're playing professional rugby, you have to make as much money as you can. That's your job. You know, if Racing are offering me four times the salary that Ospreys are offering me, I've got to go to Racing. I mean, I've got family, I've got a wife, I've got a kid, I've got a mortgage, I'm a professional. My job is rugby.
And you adopt that with the social distance sports bar. You do very little for free.
I'd ditch those fellas in a heartbeat if I could. If I get twice the money to go somewhere else, I'm off.
What's the French equivalent that pays him four times more?
Yeah.
I'm not going to even try to translate that into French.
You start basing your pod over there and then like end it and get the chômage. and get that.
India's the money, mate. I've been saying we should just do cricket specials for the Indian market. They've got a billion people. What are we doing? Messing around with flipping? Come on.
You're going to be
all the cash.
That can be your project, Mike. You can be the man that brings rugby to India. I wanted to ask you one more thing before you went, and it kind of comes back to that positivity element. And you know, you said earlier you're happy to go and watch a team playing some good rugby, even if they lose five games in the Six Nations. But it sounds like, you know, falling back in love with the group a little bit again. Speaking to rugby people in Wales, a lot of rugby people have been telling me they prefer to go watch Cardiff play than watch Wales play in recent years, which is kind of what you were getting at. Did the Welsh public need to fall back in love a little bit with their national side? And has that process started, do you think?
Yes, and I hope so. So the biggest problem we got with the international games at the moment is there's an awful lot of people there that aren't, this is not meant to sound snobby, that aren't rugby fans, right? I got tired of going to games. And they're not cheap, you know. It was like 120 quid for me and whatever. For me and my boy to go was probably best part of £200 for okay tickets. And you don't mind doing that because it's a bind and it's not easy, but you do it because you love watching the team play and you want your boy to watch rugby. But then when you've then got to stand up every 5 minutes because the bloke next to you is going to the bar constantly and wants to go to the loo constantly, and you know, it's just the money again. It comes back to money again, doesn't it? They make so much money on those bars. The actual experience of watching rugby, I've been able to watch rugby internationally since 1982, my first game, right? It's not like drinking is a new thing at rugby, right? I've been going to Dublin since 1990. It's the same thing, right? But we used to go for a drink before a game, and then you would try to smuggle in a hip flask, a cheap one, in case you got found and binned, right? You might have a couple of tots in the hip flask during the game, and then you go to the pub after the game. But now you get in there like an hour before, drinking for an hour before, they leave the bar open all game. It's a nightmare. I got to watch the Wales football team play, and they close the bar during the game. You know, so it's open half time, it's open before the game, it's open after the game, but you can't get a drink during the game. Well, that's what it should be like.
Question, did they do it's a unique experience for me, was the two pint glass. They are enormous.
It's a recipe for disaster.
Do they sell them in the stadium?
I haven't seen them. They sell them in the arena because I want to watch Eurasia. I went to watch Eurasia last year and we were on the 2 pint glasses. That's a heavy round, that is, God.
That was, yeah, that was eye-opening for me.
It was an eye-opener. Yeah, funny enough, so speaking of Ireland, by the way, so 4 years ago today, I was at top of the tower there in Dublin having a pint of Guinness with some of the parents because my boy was playing Cardiff Schools against Terenure. So we went there for the weekend, and it was 4 years ago this weekend. No, 4 years ago today was the photograph.
Must be pretty handy then if he's playing Cardiff Schools.
Well, he was lucky. He played a year up. So he was a little kid. He was playing a year up and then they played against Terenure a year up again. So he was playing like 2 years up again when we get to Ireland. But then all the next season was gone because of COVID. So he was lucky that he got a chance to play.
Well, we'll keep an eye out for the name Bubbins. What position does he play?
He plays back row.
Right, we'll see another. Well, that was the same position as you, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's better than me. He passes.
He passes.
So he sounds a little bit more balanced as well.
Yeah. Right, we'll keep an eye out for the Bubbins name in the Cardiff back row in the next couple of years. Mike, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Nathan. Thanks, Gordon.
Mike, pleasure as always, my friend.
Yeah, thank you very much, mate. I'll see you hopefully this year. We'll get over there. And good luck to both sides on the weekend. And if you're over there for Dublin for the rugby, you will have the best weekend ever.
My thanks to both Mike Bubbins and Gordon Darcy. My name is Nathan Johns. You've been listening to The Counter-Up, brought to you by the Irish Times in partnership with Nifty Business. Many thanks for listening. Make sure you leave a rating and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.